Have you ever noticed that the villain in pretty much every cartoon is always the rich person? This is something I never actually realized until I had this very enlightening conversation about money with today's guest. So, money is a very triggering and polarizing topic. We want it, yet we're scared of it. We need it, yet on some level, we think making a lot of it is wrong or gross or greedy. But here's the thing. If you want to be an entrepreneur, and you want to make money online, which if you're listening to this, I know that you do. You need to heal your relationship with money, and it starts with analyzing and understanding your unique money mindset. Today, me and my new Canadian friend, Dr. Kim Foster, are diving into all things money. So Dr. Kim Foster is an MD turned coach, leading business mentor for health and wellness entrepreneurs, and founder of the Wellness Coach Academy. After experiencing the frustrations and limitations of conventional healthcare system for many years, and then discovering the incredible potential of wellness coaching, she now helps health and wellness coaches build their businesses, find freedom, and make the world a healthier place. She has been featured on multiple TV, radio, and print media outlets, and is also the host of the podcast Marketing and Mindset for Wellness Coaches. Whether working with clients privately or inside her flagship business accelerator program, Kim is on a mission to help new and emerging coaches create and market their signature programs, serve more clients, and find true fulfillment. The Wellness Coach Academy, a complete training and certification program for women's wellness coaches, Kim's newest and most comprehensive offering yet, launched in 2021. So, in this episode, we will cover how socialized medicine makes health professionals afraid to make money, how to tell when your money mindset needs to be healed, the most common money block that most coaches have, the dangers of overcharging, how to raise your prices without vomiting on your shorts, how to improve your money mindset so that you can start charging premium prices. I know you're going to love this episode. Let's talk about money. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Wealthy Coach podcast, where I teach you how to become wealthy AF in your business, your mindset, your coaching, and your life. I'm your host, Kendra Perry. I am a former functional health coach turned online business mentor for health coaches, practitioners, and professionals. I'm here to help you grow the online business of your dreams by teaching you the strategy, the tech, and by helping you cultivate the mindset you need to be a badass health entrepreneur. I'm blunt, I'm to the point, and I'll probably drop an F-bomb or two, so fasten your seatbelts and get ready to become wealthy AF. Hi, Kim. Welcome to the Wealthy Coach podcast.
Hey, Kendra, how are you? I'm so happy to be here.
Me too. I'm very excited to talk about our topic today. We are going to dive into money, my friends, which I know makes you excited yet very uncomfortable. So it's going to be a really great conversation. We're going to talk a little bit about the mindset around money, which I know is going to be really valuable for everyone in the audience. But before we jump into that, Kim, I would love to know your story and how you got into helping health coaches.
Yeah, great question. So, I mean, basically, so I'm an MD turned wellness coach, and I'm also a business mentor, for my fellow health and wellness coaches, and I'm the founder of the Wellness Coach Academy. But I mean, how I got to this stage, like where I am right now, is, essentially my journey began after I was experiencing a lot of the frustrations and limitations of the conventional healthcare system that I had been functioning in for many years as a family doctor. And then I discovered this incredible world of health and wellness coaching. And that really just changed everything for me and just set me on a whole new pathway. And so I pivoted to coaching. I learned everything that I could about coaching and not just about coaching, but also about business and marketing and entrepreneurship, which was also this whole new, very cool world for me because it was very different than what I had been, trained in, of course. But then after building a successful career for myself in wellness, like as a coach, I kind of pivoted again then because I then began starting to help other women who were interested in doing the same thing, right? Like creating a freedom-based career for themselves, pursuing wellness coaching. And so that's what I do now. You know, like I train other people to become wellness coaches, whether they come from a healthcare background like me, or whether they are totally into like moving into a whole new career for themselves. And then I also help health and wellness coaches who are working on building a business to really up-level everything about their business through my mentorship programs.
I love that. Yeah. And I agree with you that the conventional medical system must have felt really constraining, especially if you have an interest in actually like building health and health and wellness and that sort of thing.
Definitely. Yes. Yeah. That was me. I just, yeah. I mean, it's not like, I won't say I woke up and realized I was in the wrong place, but a little bit, it was actually like that, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, there was just so many, constraints, like you said, limitations, disillusionment was a big thing. And then, you know, from like a career perspective, professional perspective, but then also from a personal perspective too, I found that I had put myself into this box of a career that gave me no freedom, no flexibility. And, you know, I had little kids and that was a priority for me. I had a whole life that I wanted to live also. And I was really struggling with that. There was a lot of friction between the career that I had chosen for myself and what I really wanted and envisioned for my life. So I needed a solution to that too.
Yeah. And it seems to me like I have quite a few friends who are doctors. It seems that they have like the work demands are intense. Like they work a lot, they work long hours. I'm in Canada, so it's probably a little bit different, but I've learned like the rate they're getting paid per patient. So they're just like spinning out of like, we have socialized medicine. So it's probably a little bit different, but like, it's insane. Like, I'm just like, how do you do that?
Kendra, I'm in Canada too.
Are you in Canada too? Yes. Oh my God. I didn't know that. I should have done my research.
No worries. Yeah. I'm, you know, you're not alone in making that.
I just assume everyone's American.
Same. Actually, I do the same. In fact, to be truthful, I didn't actually realize that you were Canadian too.
Oh my gosh. We're
on this discovery journey together. Seriously.
Where in Canada are you?
I'm in Victoria, British Columbia. Where are you?
Oh my God. I'm in Nelson.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So
great. Like we could actually like meet in person one day, like for sure.
We totally could do that.
Normally when people are American, I'm like, oh, especially with the right now, I'm like, oh, we'll never meet. Very cool. Yes. Very cool.
I was going to say like this, because you started to talk about the socialized medicine. Mm-hmm. I mean, that I'm highly familiar with.
Yeah.
And I mean, if we're going to talk about like money mindset, that was a big thing for me, because healthcare in this country is like, it's quote unquote free, right? Like nobody is in the mindset of paying for their health or well-being. And that was a big barrier for me to overcome in my own mind too. So, but anyway, we can get into that if you want.
Well, it's just interesting, because I remember when I was health coach for 5 years, and you know, it's like, I talked to Americans and they're like, that's a great deal. And then I talked to Canadians and they were like, whoa, that is crazy expensive. And it's just the difference. You know, Americans are obviously used to paying. In Canada, we get a lot of things covered. But I mean, I think a lot of people think Canada has this like amazing, like free healthcare. And it's, I mean, they're obviously, I think it's important to have a public system. But I mean, as someone who waited a year for a knee surgery, like, you know, it has its downfalls.
It absolutely does. And I mean, I don't know how far down the rabbit hole you want to get into this, probably not, but I mean, it's true. Like, you know, what I usually say is it's a free system, but it comes at a cost.
It does. So, you know, it does come at a cost. Awesome. Okay. Well, let's dive into money mindset now that we've both established that we're from British Columbia. So what do you think is like, what do you see as the most common mindset that coaches have around money, especially like the newbies?
Oh, so many things. I mean, so to pick one, I would say that one of the biggest stumbling blocks when it comes to money and when you are building a business as a coach is the belief that that nobody wants to pay for this, there's nobody out there who's willing to invest in this and nobody wants to pay premium rates and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And of course, the biggest problem with that is that you cannot decide what somebody else is willing to pay for, right? Like, and because so much of that is like, you really, if you're saying that kind of story, like if you are, which is, it's a story, right? It's a limiting belief, right? This idea that nobody wants to pay. First of all, like that kind of language, like nobody should be a tip off that that's a limiting belief, right? Because that's, it's extreme, right? It's just, it's that no, nobody, never, always, those kinds of clues that that is just a story. It's a belief that's in your own mind. And it comes from somewhere, and it probably comes from you, right? So if you're saying that nobody's willing to pay, then there's a good chance you need to do a little bit of inner work and examine what you are willing to pay, what you are willing to invest in. And are you projecting that onto other people and making people's decisions for them about what they are willing to invest in? And that's not your job. And in fact, it's not your business to decide what other people are willing to invest in and what's important to them and not important to them. So I would say that's a huge thing for especially for new coaches.
Yeah, and I see that so much, but it's crazy. I made a reel on my Instagram the other day where I was talking about like people spend $1,500 on an iPhone, on a new iPhone, and everyone's like, sweet, great investment. But like, people aren't like, we think people aren't willing to invest that in their health, or, you know, it just doesn't make sense in a lot of ways, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm not saying that there is necessarily logic in a certain individual's like what they are willing to invest in, for sure. But you know, and it's kind of like people will pay or buy. I've had clients who, you know, they're confused about why they're having a hard time getting clients to say yes, and sign on, but then they can see on their this potential client's social post they have just bought a new Peloton bike, and we all know that those aren't free either, right? So what it comes down to though is not focusing on like the story that people are unwilling to pay, but really communicating, making sure that like doing your job about communicating the value, right? So because a person will spend all the money on a Peloton bike because on some level they believe that there is value in that. Same thing with a phone, right? Like they have decided in their own calculations that that has value, and then that they are in good exchange to spend that value. So that's why so much, instead of focusing on feeling frustrated that people, everybody is unwilling to pay, focusing on like, well, how are you communicating the value of what you're actually doing? Like really digging into that is a much more productive and effective way to spend your energy, is focusing on that element of things.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think what maybe newer coaches don't realize is that like people don't understand the value of what you're offering right off the bat. Obviously, with like an iPhone or like a Peloton bike, which I barely know what it is, but I hear everyone talking about it lately. But it's like they've decided that they're going to get something out of it. It's going to make them feel a certain way, or it's going to make them like look a certain way, or whatever. Right. But like with a health coaching package, like that's new to them. They don't know that. So like they, you actually, it's your job as the coach to like figure out what that value is, right?
Exactly. Yeah, because Peloton has done an amazing job of showing people what the value is in their bike. Like you see images, you see the visuals, you get like that whole all of that, the benefits are being very clearly communicated. And that's what I think coaches really fall down and struggle around, is communicating what are the real tangible actual benefits of working with you. And it's not just like coaching for coaching's sake, right? Like that's a big problem. Trying to sell people on coaching is just never going to work, because why would anybody want to do that? Like you're not really explaining to them why they would actually want that. So if you're getting a lot of resistance over money, it's never about the money. It's always about the value, because if they really understood what it was that you were offering, and what it would actually do to their life, like we're talking life-changing stuff here, obviously. Like this is not trivial things. And so if you can find a way, and there's lots of ways to communicate the benefit of what this can actually do for a person, then you can charge anything you want, really, right?
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. And so let's dive a little bit more into like the value, like what would be certain like value or benefits or outcomes that people would pay for versus just like a coaching session.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it really depends on the specific needs of your ideal client, which is what it always comes down to, is being super specific about who it is that you want to work with, how you're helping them, what problem are you solving for them? You don't want to solve a problem of like they've got a few hours that they don't really know what to do with, so they might as well get on a coaching call with somebody. That's not a problem that they have, right? But they have a problem of, and whatever it is, right? So again, you have to be very specific for your, this is where a coach needs to do their work in terms of figuring out who their, what their niche is and being specific on their ideal client. But is it weight loss? Like, is it losing weight, or is it energy, or is it digestive complaints, like chronic digestive complaints? And the pain point there is that they've gone to their doctor repeatedly and are not getting any kind of answer, support, or help. And you're going to solve that and help them with knowing, what to eat, all of those kinds of pieces, right? Or is it stress, like total overwhelm and stress and not knowing and not sleeping because you keep waking up in the middle of the night because you don't know what to do with yourself and having all kinds of physical symptoms of stress, hair falling out, whatever, right? So those are, if you can really translate the specific problems and benefits for your particular niche, then that's when you make that really strong emotional connection with your potential clients. And that's when they really understand and they see the value in what, how you can help them.
Yeah, and so what I really got out of that is that you won't be able to communicate the value if you don't know who you're talking to, right? And you don't know who the niche is. And I definitely try to hammer this niche thing down everyone's throat so much on this podcast, but it's a block, right? They're like, most coaches are so resistant to niching. Why do you think that is?
I think there's a couple of reasons why that is. One is because, especially in the beginning, usually there's a certain amount of desperation for clients, right? You just want somebody, anybody to work with you, right? Because, and it's not necessarily always just for cash, although that's usually like because you need some cash flow, right? You need some income. But it's also for the validation that you're doing the right thing. If this is a relatively new venture, if you could just get some people to say yes and become paying clients, then maybe your husband would get off your case about like, are you, is this actually a business and not a hobby? All of those kinds of things. I hear so many of those things. So people really do want clients in the beginning. And so the natural, and it feels like a logical conclusion, right? The wider you cast your net, the more likely it is that you're going to catch a client, right? Like that just feels very logical. However, the truth is quite the opposite, right? Because if you present yourself as super generic, I know that you have said this many times to your people, but if you present yourself as totally generic, like a jack of all trades, that's going to be mildly interesting to people, and they'll be like, maybe I'll like follow her and watch what she's saying. But it's not going to be strong or compelling enough for them to be like, I need to work with this person. This person can solve my problem. I need to get on the phone and I need to pull out my credit card right now and sign up with her program. So yeah, so I think that the some of the reasons, the blocks for the niching, a big one probably really is just that, a certain degree of desperation and a somewhat logical idea that if you cast your net wide, you'll capture more potential clients, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting, like how much I get so much pushback from coaches. They're like, "Well, I see this other person out there, and they don't have a niche." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's great. There's always exceptions to the rule, but like that is very hard, you know." And like, when did that person build their business? Did they build it like 10 years ago, even 5 years ago? Because in 2021, it's without a niche, I think it's going to be really tough because there's a lot of coaches online now, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's a competitive marketplace for sure, and you need to differentiate yourself. And it also ties into what we were talking about was like the benefit of if you're just talking about coaching in very generic, vague terms, I can help improve your health, I can help you achieve your health goals. Like it's not compelling enough to get people to understand the value, and then you're going to be undervalued, and then it's you become a commodity, right? Then they can just compare you to the pricing of any other average Joe health coach out there who's just, offering the same old that everybody is. So it's not good branding. It's not good positioning to just be so vague, even though I know that that's the impulse. So you have to kind of go against the impulse. And it does take bravery. Like it's a quite a courageous act, right? To really plant your stake in the ground and say, this is who I am, this is who I help, this is what I stand for. And it feels scary because it feels like you're turning people away. Yeah. And that is true. You actually are turning people away, but that's actually what's required because you don't need all the clients in the world. Like, you don't need everybody to become your client. You need the people who are really the absolute ideal for you, who are going to absolutely resonate with you. And you need those people to feel incredibly compelled and attracted by everything that you're doing. And you can only do that by being specific.
Just going to take a quick break from this episode to ask you a few questions. So, do you absolutely dread your sales calls? Or do you feel awkward and uncomfortable when you get on the phone with a prospective client? Does your voice choke like a teenager when you quote the price of your package? Or potentially, you don't even have any sales calls to feel uncomfortable about at all. So while sales can feel slimy and pushy, it is also the single most important activity that you do in your business. Without sales, you actually don't have a business. So I invite you to join me for my workshop, How to Rock Your Sales Calls and Enroll Your Dream Clients. In this 2-hour workshop, I'm going to be teaching you my entire sales process that I have used to sell hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of sales. So I'm going to teach you how to position your sales calls to attract the right people, people who are actually interested in investing. I'm going to teach you how to lead the call so the other person doesn't hijack the conversation. I'm going to teach you how to sell without feeling salesy, slimy, or pushy. So I'm going to teach you how to sell authentically. I'll teach you how to handle objections like a pro, how to follow up to boost your sales, and how to triple your close rate. Plus, I'm going to be giving you the actual script that you can customize and have in front of you as you conduct your sales calls. So let me ask you, what would it be worth to you to feel confident on your next sales call and to watch your schedule fill up with appointments of ideal clients that you are excited to serve? Very worth it, I hope. So if you want to join me, you can visit go.kendraperry.net/sales. That's go.kendraperry.net/sales. And I will link to that in the show notes. I hope to see you there. Yeah, I completely and totally agree. And I think also it not only makes it easier for people to like see the coach as the person who's going to help them, but also the coach, like if you're trying to talk about inflammation, leaky gut, and like diabetes and like all these different topics, and like you're trying to be an expert in so many things, like you're going to confuse yourself along with everyone else.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's very tough to be like a specialist in everything. I mean, you can't stay on top of everything. And so it harms your marketing and your messaging, but it also kind of dilutes your skill set. Like how could you actually stay on top of all of those areas?
Yeah, absolutely agree. So let's talk about undercharging, because I see a lot of undercharging. I'm sure you do too. So how would a coach know if they're undercharging, and like what ends up happening when coaches are undercharging?
Yeah, undercharging is a big problem, and it's it's incredibly common, especially in the health and wellness space. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that has to do with some of the other money blocks, like feeling kind of guilty or bad, or that there's something wrong about charging people for things that have to do with their health and well-being, like that should be free, that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. But the problem, of course, with undercharging and undervaluing yourself is that your potential clients are going to undervalue you too, right? Mm-hmm. Because I mean, honestly, if you just stop and think about like a shopping experience that you've had. If you're comparing two things side by side and you're looking at one thing that's priced at $20 and you're looking at one thing that's priced at $2, and like your impulse, your natural inclination just think that the $20 thing is more valuable, right? Like that's just kind of human nature. You're going to think, oh, that's a superior product in some way. And so when people encounter your stuff, and if it seems really strangely cheap, then they might think, well, I'm not really going to get much out of that, and it might not be worth my time, because time is something that we are all very scarce on too, right? And so people are going, consumers, potential customers are going to be very hesitant to commit their time to something if they feel like it's not really going to be worth it. It's not, maybe she doesn't really have any experience. You know, there's all kinds of stuff that people, judgments that people will make about your services if they are really undervalued and underpriced. Then, but you know, if you do actually manage to have some clients who are on board with you, they of course may not be your right client because they might have just chosen you because you were the commoditized, like the cheaper version, right? And they just wanted to kind of dip their toe in, but they, even though they weren't maybe like a great fit for you, but they just sort of grabbed your program because it was like, oh, it's the cheapest thing I can find, so I'm just going to do this. So that's not a great scenario. Obviously, you don't want people who are in your practice who are not your ideal client. They're not going to get great results. It's going to be super frustrating for you. You know, that's not a good outcome. And plus, when people are minimally invested in something, it's not just the financial investment, it is the psychological investment too, right? They are not necessarily, you know, I mean, we've all had this experience. When you invest big in something and you've got a lot of skin in the game, you're going to show up and do the work, right? Like you are going to get so much more out of that because you know that you've put a lot of your money on the line, right? So, you know, charging appropriately means you're going to get people in your business, in your practice, who are really committed. They are the right fit for you, and they are going to show up and do the work, which means they're going to get amazing results and you're going to get a great testimonial out of that, not to mention have a really rewarding experience and get paid better. And that means that you personally don't have to take on as many people, which means you actually can deliver a superior service to those fewer clients that you have.
Yeah, I love that so much, and it's so true. And I also notice that the clients who pay more are also the least maintenance. They like just show up, they do the work, and maybe in between sessions they send you a message or two. But I remember charging my first program, I think I charged like $300 or $400, and that felt crazy. I was like, oh my God, this is so much money. And like, I had these clients who would like email me like 30 times a day and were super demanding of my time and just, you know, didn't respect the boundaries. And it's just, there's such a difference between, and I don't know what it is, but it's just, I've had that experience. And have you had that experience as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm not exactly sure what that's about, but that is definitely a phenomenon, and I've heard many people describe the same thing. So yeah, it's just exhausting, and that's when people start talking about burnout, yeah, and all that sort of stuff. But I think like what you just said a couple minutes ago, how when you first started charging that, it felt really scary, and that's okay. Like that, I mean, that's what I tell my clients too, is like you want to feel like a little bit like you're on the edge of you're about to throw up at saying this price. But then you're going to stair step your way up, right? Like it's not, you don't have to charge like your big hairy goal price right out of the gate. You can start at a price that feels like it's kind of on the upper limit of what you're comfortable with, and then push yourself and keep going up there. You get to sign a couple of clients at this rate, and then you keep on moving up from there. That's what that approach usually works the best for
Yeah.
me.
Yeah, I think it's helpful for people not to actually like vomit, right? Because they're doing it like slowly and incrementally and maybe with every few clients so that, you know, they're getting that more experience and that sort of thing. But it's interesting because I think a lot of coaches, like they want to make 5K a month or they want to make 10K a month. But then if you're only charging a few hundred dollars, you do the math, like you got to be juggling like almost 100 clients. And like, I don't know how people do that. Like that is not good.
That's not a recipe for, you know, an empowered business in my mind, or one that gives you a sense of fulfillment and certainly like the freedom that's kind of gone out the window. So, yeah.
Totally. So what are some things that coaches can do to improve their money mindset?
Yeah, great question. So, I mean, It always starts with really tapping in and listening to your own stories about money, because everything that you are doing with it, like all the decisions that you're making about your business and the way that you are showing up and conducting yourself, it all comes back to what you currently believe about money. So if you have got some, and we all do really, like, I mean, I've yet to meet a person who doesn't have some, you know, stuff going on that we all get programmed about money, like, you know, what our parents taught us and what society at large taught us, and, like, you know, just so many things, cultural influences, so much stuff. So you have to unpack all that stuff, because until you do, that is just going to be operating in the background, influencing what you believe, how you feel, how you act. So you've really got to get in tune with what you actually believe about money. So, I mean, good old fashioned journaling. I love journaling. Like, I think that it is just, it's a simple thing, but it's a really powerful thing just to sit down and write down, what are your beliefs about money? What are your beliefs about your ability to earn money? What are your beliefs about what it means to be making money in an online business? Like, a lot of people have, because it feels, you know, it's very different, right? Like, this is sort of the new world, right? You know, newish, of making money online. It's different than what our parents had. And for many people, it feels like maybe that's wrong. Like, maybe there's something kind of shady about that. And so if that's actually your belief system that's operating unconsciously under the surface, you're going to hold yourself back, because nobody wants to be a bad person, like, or evil, or doing something shady, right? So, you know, so we can't really guess at what different people's beliefs are about money, or their ability to charge, or what they believe other people are capable of paying, or what it means to sell. Also, that's another biggie, right? Is, like, you know, not wanting to be salesy and not wanting to ask for money and all of those kinds of things. But what are the stories and the thoughts and the beliefs that you have about what it means to sell, or to be in business, or to charge for your services? So looking at those, and once you can really identify what your own particular belief systems are about money and business and charging and all that sort of stuff, then you can start to, you know, unpack each of those unsupportive beliefs. So when you identify, like, an unhelpful belief that's holding you back, then you can start to challenge it. You can look for evidence to the contrary. You can look at, like, where that's coming from. You can ask yourself simple questions like, is that true? Is that really true? Right. Mm-hmm. And then you can start to unhook yourself from those belief systems and ask yourself much more empowering questions like, what if charging premium rates means that I actually am helping people more, right? Like, asking yourself really good quality questions about money, and that will help you to step into a much more empowered mindset around money.
Yeah, I love that. And it's so true that I think we have really associated money with negativity, you know, like, and I think there, and I mean, there's still a dominant narrative out there that, you know, the people who have money are greedy, and they only got there by, like, stepping on other people's toes and, like, being slimy and, like, manipulating people and tricking them out of their money. And I think too, maybe we think of, like, that like door-to-door salesman that comes to the door and sells us, like, a broke vacuum or something like that.
Yes, there's so many, like, tropes and archetypes and, like, all of these kinds of things. And really, it's so pervasive. Like, once you actually start to become aware of it, like, once I really, a few years ago, really started to understand my own messed up mindset with money, I started to see it in places that I really hadn't realized. Like, my kids, you know, they'll watch some, like, you know, ridiculous TV show, whatever, Disney, you know, whatever, and or a movie. Mm-hmm. And the villain is always the rich person, right? Like, what is that about? Like, why is that always? So we are actually, like, you know, teaching our kids that, like, the rich person is probably the bad guy, right? And so, you know, that's just one tiny little way, like, in our popular media culture, like, everything like that. And we sort of learn, we internalize these lessons that, like, I'm not sure that I want to, like, have a lot of money, because then that means that I'm the villain. And, you know, we don't necessarily think those things consciously, but it's once you actually start to really do the work and look underneath and be like, wait a second, I do have that belief. Like, I had no idea. And of course, that's going to be sabotaging me, and I'm going to hold myself back. But I didn't realize that it was under there. So that's where you know, where you're going to get a lot of transformation for yourself, is to really look at what are your unhelpful beliefs that are underneath the surface.
Yeah, it's so true when it comes to like cartoons. I'm thinking of like The Simpsons and like, was it like Mr. Burns?
Mr. Burns.
Like rich, like horrible person. Like,
yeah, yeah.
There's so many examples of that.
Yeah, exactly. Cruella de Vil, in her, you know, like, like all the Disney villains are like the rich person living in the castle or, you know, whatever. And it's not just Disney, of course. It's like, you know, and it's just throughout, it's threaded throughout our culture. Plus then you layer into things like, you know, like actual family members saying, you know, money doesn't grow on trees, and, you know, and giving us things like, you know, if it wasn't work, it wouldn't, you know, what is the, like, you know, stuff about like working hard, like that's really the only valid way to make money, which I think is what holds a lot of coaches back, because when you're charging more and working less, you have to kind of get over that, this idea that there's something wrong about that, right?
Yeah.
Because you've been told by your grandparents, and, you know, maybe you've got older relatives who were like, you know, lived through Depression era or, you know, whatever, right? Like when it was, you know, quite different. And so all of that stuff, there's just trickle down influences that, you know, we get programmed by all along.
Yeah, definitely. And so what have been some of your money mindset blocks that you've overcome?
Yeah, well, for me, because like we started to talk about like the whole healthcare issue, right? Like when I was, you know, my whole professional life was functioning in medicine, and healthcare is paid for by the government, right? Like it's state funded healthcare. And so I never had any kind of exchange with people about money. Like that just was not a thing, and it made me really uncomfortable. So even talking to people about money, I had to do a lot of work about why that was okay. Like that was an okay conversation to have. And in fact, if I wanted to have a business, was more than just okay. It had to be that way. And so I had to, you know, find a more empowered way of approaching those kinds of conversations. And also I had to do a lot of work on making money is evil kind of thing, right? Because that was, I mean, because doctors in this country are not encouraged to, you know, make a lot of money. And in fact, I had many, many personal stories of colleagues who, if they were making more money for whatever reason, like they were working extra hours, that kind of thing, they were actually villainized. Like talk about your villains, like movie villains. I actually had a colleague when I was working in Ontario when I was very new grad, and he was the only pediatrician in this tiny little town, and he worked all the hours of the day. Like everybody knew that he was just super dedicated to working in the hospital and taking care of his like pediatric patients, right? But OHIP, which is the funding for Ontario, you know, they decided that his billings were too high and they audited him. And then the media got a hold of that, and he was just villainized in the media, and just they clawed back money from him because they said he had made too much money, when we all knew like he just worked every single hour of the day. And that was how he did it. And we're not talking about like millions, but anyway. Anyway, he was just so, his reputation was absolutely killed, and he just, it was horrible. And he ended up drowning himself in Lake Ontario because it was just horrendous. Like it was just.
When so was this? I grew up in Ontario. It just sounds familiar. I'm wondering if I remember I heard about this.
Oh, maybe you did. Yeah, it was. So I was in 2001. I think it was. Yeah. Around 2001. Yeah.
It sounds really familiar. That's like a really, really like horrible, horrible story. Like poor guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was awful. And I think for me, because I witnessed that at like the very beginning of my career, I was like, oh my God, best not make too much money and attract too much attention to myself, or else I might be villainized. And, you know, so yeah. And that was some of the stuff that I had to deal with when I exited, you know, the conventional medicine in the state funded healthcare system and went into like private, you know, business, right, for myself. So yeah, those are some of the things that I
Yeah,
had
that
to.
is some stuff to work through. It's so crazy. But yeah, I mean, with doctors in this country too, it's just like you pay so much for your education and then like, you know, you work super hard for like a half decent salary, it feels like.
Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I was always saying to my husband, I was like, if I, they're in enterprise, like in business and entrepreneurs, like if they make half a million a year or, or if they may hit milestones, they get on the cover of Forbes. If I, as a physician, were to find a way to do that, I would be absolutely lambasted and probably arrested. Like it's just
Yes, totally.
yeah, and there's not too many other professions that it's like that, where you really are not permitted to make a lot of money. And I mean, don't get me wrong, like doctors are, it's absolutely, it's a good living. And that was actually a thing that I had to overcome, because I was, as I was jumping out of an airplane without a parachute, like into this whole new weird world of coaching, and everybody around me was like, what are you doing? Because, medicine is a great career, and it definitely provides a very comfortable income. It's just that it is a limit. There is a limit to how much you can make. And if you want a career where there is no limit like that, then yeah, there's other things to do, right? And which that's what I discovered. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so, can you tell me a little bit more about how you work with your clients?
Yeah, so I work with people privately. I have private coaching packages or like business mentorship packages for people who are growing health and wellness businesses. I also have a small group mentorship that's called Business Academy for Coaches. And so, yeah, in that group, we learn all the like business from building your choosing your niche for sure. That's always our starting and building a signature program, branding, marketing, all that kind of stuff. So those are my business mentorship. And then I have a few courses and things. I have a course on working with physicians, like collaborating, getting healthcare referrals and things, because that's a really important and untapped relationship, in my opinion. But then I also train health and wellness coaches. I have that's my n latest venture is the Wellness Coach Academy, where it's a 6-month training program for people who love the idea of becoming a wellness coach. And maybe they come from a healthcare background, like they're a nurse or a physician or whatever. Or maybe they were in corporate, they're in a totally different career field. And then this is a complete training and certification program to become a
Super
wellness
cool.
coach. Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that. You have so many things. It's great.
Thank you. Yeah. It's so much fun. I just like, yeah, I just feel happy and excited about it every day.
That's awesome. So how can our audience stalk you online? Where can they find you and connect with you and send you questions from this episode?
Yeah, so I mean, you can definitely find me on I'm on Instagram at Dr. Kim Foster. That's a great place to find me. I'm there all the time. You can DM me. That's how we connected, I think, right,
Yeah, I
Kendra?
think I stalked you and then sent you a message. I was like, "Ooh, this girl seems cool." And I didn't even know you were Canadian.
It's so funny. That is just too funny. Yeah, so Instagram is great. You can certainly go to my website, drkimfoster.com, and check out all the stuff that I'm doing. And then my training program is at wellnesscoachacademy.com. And so those are all the best places to find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming today and sharing your wisdom on money mindset with our audience. I hope they found it very enlightening. I'm sure that they have. And thank you everyone for listening today. I will see you next week, same time, same place, where I help you become wealthy AF. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I'm wondering, do you want to help me with my mission to end health coach poverty? Because if you do, I need all the help I can get, and all I need is 2 minutes of your time. If you could leave me a 5-star review on iTunes, that would help so much. These reviews help get my podcast in front of more people, which means that I can reach more health coaches and complete my mission. Thank you so much for your help, and I can't wait to talk to you in the next episode.